It is a privilege to be here today, passing on to you not only the teachings of my great teacher, Shunryu Suzuki Roshi, but by passing on the meaning of his teachings, giving meaning to the practice of all of the great Buddhist ancestors, all the way back to Shakyamuni Buddha. The talk today is short and is about constancy and the difference between constancy and patience. Constancy is another word that means expressing our true nature, our single-minded way. Constancy is the way we cultivate our spirit and express our sincerity. It's the way of our continuous practice and of always living, as Roshi says, in the dark, empty sky. So constancy, the spirit of repetition, and living in the dark, empty sky are all the same. Roshi says, even if the sun were to rise from the west, the bodhisattva has only one way, and that's the single-minded way in the title of this talk, which is basically simply the expression of our true nature. Constancy, Roshi insists, it's not clothing that we put on. It's who we are before and after whatever clothes, our thoughts, our knowledge that we put on. We are Buddhism. It's not some add-on. I think that's one of the biggest misconceptions going about Zen. Like Zen is this thing. weird thing, maybe. And it's so the opposite that it's almost ridiculous. It's just we are Buddhism. We are the truth that Buddhism is there to point out. It's our true nature. And so Roshi says, because Buddha was the founder of the teaching, people tentatively called his teaching Buddhism. But actually, Buddhism is not some particular teaching. Buddhism is just truth, which includes various truths in it. When we ask what Buddha nature is, it vanishes. But when we just practice, we have full understanding. So in other words, if you try to, you say, well, what is Buddha nature? And then your mind starts spinning and you can't pin it down. But if you're just practicing, you actually know what Buddha nature is. And that's the constancy that Roshi is talking about. He says, even though you do not do anything, you have the quality of Zazen always. But if you try to find it, if you try to see the quality, you do not see the quality. So then he says, so try not to see something in particular. Try not to achieve anything special. You already have everything in your own pure quality. These things are so simple, but we forget them constantly. When you do something, if you fix your mind on the activity with some confidence, the quality of your state of mind is the activity itself. That's what I've been saying these recent weeks about effort, that the quality of our effort is everything. It's just, that's it. That's almost the only thing we need to focus on. When you're concentrated on the quality of your being, you are prepared for the activity. That's how Roshi puts it. Many of us, Roshi says, gather pieces of information from various sources, thinking to increase our knowledge. Actually, following this way, we end up not knowing anything at all. That's what Suzuki Roshi says. We should not hoard knowledge as if knowledge is things. Instead of a collection you could put on a shelf and look at and even appreciate, he says we should not be interested. Just don't be interested. Instead of gathering knowledge, we should clear our minds. When we listen to teaching with a pure, clear mind, we can accept it as if we were hearing something we already know. This, he says, is called emptiness or knowing everything. When you know everything, you are like a dark sky. And as long as we live in the utter darkness of sky, there is always a possibility of understanding. This is beginner's mind. Notice that Roshi uses the word constancy instead of patience. The latter, he says, not only can require force, but actually can be non-acceptance. In constancy, there's no particular effort, only the unchanging ability to accept things as they are. People who know, if only intuitively, the state of emptiness always have open the possibility of accepting things as they are. Listen to this. In everything they do, though it may be difficult, they can dissolve their problems by constancy. Dissolve their problems by constancy. That's what we've been talking about in the past couple of weeks. If you're just focused on the process of your practice, this is just practice, so I just continue to do it. And then I continue to do it more, and then I continue more. And you're focused on continuing, then anything that happens just gets kind of ground up in the continuing. So it's like dissolving your problems in constancy. And you probably remember, even last week, I used the expression that Roshi said, and you won't have any problems at all. There'll be no problems. And that's in the event of you practicing, which is focusing on the process of anything that you do, to focus on the process and not, you know, my toothbrush broke or whatever, you know, just continuing to make the effort to do the thing that you've decided you want to do. Constancy, the way Roshi is using it, has its own energetic force. When it is present, it does the job for you. It's like those robot vacuum cleaners that scoot themselves around your floor and clean the whole room while you're in the kitchen washing dishes. And it's, or like the part of you that has more intelligence than you and needs you to plug it in, and that's all. You know, we all have that quality. And if it were plugged in, we would have it, but we don't plug it in. There's another quality about constancy that is beside it or inside it, and that's being present for every moment. You are interested in you, in your state of mind, your quality of body and breath. Never veering from that, you will never be bored. In this sense, boredom is a wake-up call, like an alarm. Boredom goes off when you go off the track of you. Constancy also is about invisible practice. And we've talked about this. Invisible practice is everything that you do that's only seen when you don't do it. So constancy is invisible even from you. You're just going along. The truth is, it's a different kind of achievement. It's like a soul achievement. Most people don't think about their souls. Constancy, the ability to just keep on keeping on, is an achievement. And Roshi is saying it's a soul achievement. Yesterday, someone that I know referred to this bodybuilder that I sometimes give an example of, who is the most grounded human on the planet, basically. I swear, you know, I know many Zen people who promote groundedness, and this person beats them all. But anyway, yesterday, this other person said, referring to him, you know, he's like magic. I wonder how he gets that way. And so I already know how he gets that way because of his practice. But it was so interesting to hear just someone altogether different who happens to know him just say, you know, he's like magic. He's just so, he's so special in this way you can't even describe, because he's just absolutely ordinary. Anyway, that was very interesting to me. And so it is a different kind of achievement. It's a soul achievement. But, you know, it's like if you're walking down the street, people don't really notice soul achievements. Patience, which you might remember is the third paramita. And by the way, the six paramitas are ways of situating ourselves in the world to be fully authentic and allowing things to be, other things to be fully authentic. So we've talked about the six paramitas. Generosity, ethical behavior, patience, joyful effort, meditation, and wisdom. Those are the six paramitas. And patience, the third one, can, as Roshi said, become non-acceptance, the sort of grin and bear kind of patience with tightness in your stomach. But constancy is keeping on, keeping on. You just go along, maybe focusing on your breath, and there's a sort of emptiness inside, a letting go, the opposite of tightness or holding on. Within the emptiness is wisdom. And that Roshi, as always, says, whether you have difficulties in your practice or not, as long as you continue it, you have pure practice in its true sense. Even when you are not aware of it, you have it. So as long as you're practicing, as long as you're making the effort, day in and day out, you make the effort to practice not only Zen per se, Zazen per se, but whatever your practices are, you just keep on, never mind the obstacles. That's pure practice, according to Suzuki Roshi. He says, even in wrong practice, when you realize it and continue, there is right practice. Our practice cannot be perfect, but without being discouraged by this, we should continue it. This is the secret of practice, Roshi says. So we all have difficulties, you know, it's part of being alive. And reassociating to a short story I was reading by, it might have been Chekhov, I'm not sure. Anyway, the hero was very concerned about wasting money. And so he was, you know, he turned everything into, well, that's a waste of money. And he, by the end, he figured out, well, if you're dead, you won't waste money. So the best way not to waste money is to just die. Anyway, that comes to my mind. It's ridiculous, but it's also true. So if we're alive, you know, we just have to, there's going to be wasting money. And we just have to bear it and continue with whatever we're doing. Someone asked to hear the story of when Buddha was a deer again. We've heard that story very early on in these series of talks. And it's one of my favorite stories. So I'm going to tell it again. It's short. And it also demonstrates the difference between patience and constancy. It's from the biography of Buddha by Thich Nhat Hanh called Old Path with White Clouds. So basically, I'm going to read to you from Thich Nhat Hanh this story of when Buddha was a deer that took place thousands of years ago. And he lived in a forest which had a clear lake where the deer liked to drink. A turtle lived in the lake's waters, and a magpie lived in the branches of a willow tree beside the lake. Deer, turtle, and magpie were very close friends. One day, a hunter followed day-old tracks left by the deer that led to the edge of the lake. There he left a trap made of strong ropes before returning to his hut on the outskirts of the forest. Later that day, when deer came for a drink of water, he was caught by the trap. He cried out and was heard by turtle and magpie. Turtle crawled out of the water, and magpie flew down from her nest. They discussed how best to help their friend. Magpie said, "Sister Turtle, your jaws are sturdy and strong. You can use them to chew and cut through those ropes. As for me, I'll find a way to prevent the hunter from coming back here." Magpie then flew off in haste. Turtle began to gnaw at the ropes. Magpie flew to the hunter's hut and perched on a mango branch outside his front door all night to wait for him. When day broke, the hunter took a sharp knife and walked out his door. As soon as she saw him, Magpie flew into his face with all her might. Struck in the face by the bird, the hunter was momentarily dazed and went back inside his hut. He lay down on the bed to rest a moment. When he got up, he paused and then, still clutching his sharp knife, went out the back door of his hut. But clever Magpie had outguessed him. She was waiting at the back, perched on a jackfruit branch. Again, she flew into his face, smacking him hard. struck in the face twice by a bird, the hunter went back into his house to think things over. He decided it was an unlucky day and that perhaps it would be best to remain home until tomorrow. The next morning, he rose early. He picked up his sharp knife and, as a precaution, covered his face with a hat before he walked out the door. Seeing she could no longer attack the hunter's face, Magpie sped back to the forest to warn her friends. The hunter is on his way. Turtle had almost chewed through the last of the ropes, but the last rope seemed as hard as steel. Her jaws were raw and bloody from chewing nonstop throughout two nights and a day. Still, she did not stop. Just then the hunter appeared. Frightened, Deer gave a mighty kick, which broke through the last rope and set him free. Deer ran into the forest. Magpie flew high into a willow tree, but Turtle was so exhausted, she could not move. The hunter was angry to see the deer escape. He picked up the turtle and tossed her into his leather sack, which he left hanging on a branch of the willow tree. Then he went off to find Deer. Deer stood concealed behind some bushes and so saw Turtle's predicament. My friends risked their lives for me, he thought. Now it is time for me to do the same for them. Deer stepped out in full view of the hunter. He pretended to stumble as though very tired, and then he turned away and hobbled weakly down the path. The hunter thought, the deer is almost out of strength. I will stalk it and soon kill it with my knife. The hunter pursued Deer deeper and deeper into the forest. Deer managed to stay just out of his reach. When they were far from the lake, Deer suddenly broke into a run until he was out of the hunter's sight. He covered his footprints and then returned to the lake. He used his antlers to lift the leather bag off the branch and to shake Turtle out. Magpie joined her two friends. You both saved me from sure death today, said Deer. I fear he will return here before long. Magpie, fly to a safer spot in the forest. Sister Turtle, crawl back into the water and hide. I will run back into the forest. When the hunter arrived back at the lake, he found his leather sack on the ground empty. Frustrated, he picked it up and, still clutching his knife, trudged home. When he finished, Buddha said, what do you think, children? Long ago, I was Deer. Were any of you Turtle? Who among you was Magpie? So the Buddha was telling the story of when he was a deer in a past lifetime. And he felt that his students to whom he was telling the story, some were Magpie and others were Turtle. Magpie was fearless. So this is the Buddha talking. Magpie was fearless. She flew right into the hunter's face twice. Turtle, a native, I guess this is me explicating this story, not the Buddha. So Magpie was fearless, and she flew right into the hunter's face twice. Turtle was a native-born Zen student, had constancy in spades. Deer not only had patience, he was intensely loyal. He risked his life for his loyalty. While Hunter slept, Turtle and Magpie were exhaustive in their efforts to help another being. When you think about it, Hunter was the only character trying to get something for himself. Unlike the others, his purpose was always based in greed. I myself have always admired turtles. I've often thought, if I were an animal, I would choose to be a turtle, because you're always home and you just go along. But Suzuki Roshi liked frogs. He said, frogs just sit alert and ready. And when something comes along, whoop, and that's the way we should always be. Suzuki Roshi always points out to frogs as we should be sitting alert and ready. And when a piece of food comes along, snap. And that should be our attitude. Well, I hope you enjoyed this story. And that completes the talk for today. I'm gonna be quiet for a little while you think about your ideas about the difference between constancy and patience. Well, here are some of the most important points. Even though it was short, there are 8 important points. The first is, we are Buddhism. It's not some add-on. The second is, even though you do not do anything, you have the quality of Zazen always. But if you try to find it, if you try to see the quality, you do not see the quality. So try not to see something in particular. Try not to achieve anything special. You already have everything in your own pure quality. And third, constancy, the way Roshi is using it, has its own energetic force. When it is present, it does the job for you. And then I use the sort of metaphor of the robot vacuum cleaner that scoots itself around your floor and cleans the room while you're in the kitchen washing dishes. It's like the part of you that has more intelligence than you and needs you to plug it in, and that's all. That's constancy. Even in wrong practice, when you realize it and continue, there is right practice. Our practice cannot be perfect, but without being discouraged by this, we should continue it. This is the secret of practice, Roshi says. Whether you have difficulties in your practice or not, as long as you continue it, you have pure practice in its true sense. Even when you're not aware of it, you have it. The sixth one is, constancy is invisible even from you, You are just going along. The truth is, it's a different kind of achievement, like a soul achievement. Most people don't think about their souls. And then the seventh is, instead of gathering knowledge, we should clear our minds. When we listen to teaching with a pure, clear mind, we can accept it as if we were hearing something we already know. This, he says, is called emptiness, or knowing everything. And earlier he had said that's like the dark night sky. And then finally, the eighth point, even if the sun were to rise from the west, the bodhisattva has only one way. Only one way, the single-minded way, the way of our true nature, expressing with sincerity our true nature, which is Zazen. And here is an idea for your reflection during the week. What is your own definition of constancy? Please give one or two examples of when you have practiced this. Also give an example of when you didn't practice it and later wished you had. Also give an example of when you didn't practice constancy and later were just as glad that you didn't go to the trouble. Is there a lesson about constancy in these renditions of your own experience that can help you make this teaching more your own? Because that's the point of all of these teachings. We need to integrate them into our daily lives. And so as you go along like this upcoming week and think about the difference between constancy and patience and get more clear about constancy, that's a part of integrating. That's how integration happens. We need to allow time to learn things and to make them become part of our process and part of our being and the way we do things. And that just takes time. I'm going to be quiet for a moment while you think of questions. And I want to be sure to answer all the questions you have about your own practice, especially about your own practice. So I'll just give you a little bit of time to put that together. All right. Please ask whatever is on your mind.
So you have a question. The first one that we have is receiving also a gift?
Yes, because it takes both. It takes, without a receiver, there can't be a giver. A giver is only a giver if someone receives what they've given. And so it's a conversation. And Reb, my teacher, Tenchin Roshi, believes that human beings are simply a conversation, that we're so interconnected with all beings that we're like walking conversations. It's a very interesting perception. And I invite you to try it on, just even temporarily, just thinking of yourself as a conversation. Because it's a corrective. It helps you to see when things are left incomplete because there wasn't a conversation that needed to happen to clean whatever discord there is between you and another person. So we have, in our modern world, we have ghosting. And that's a perfect example of complete misunderstanding of human beings being a conversation. So I got off on conversation because of the give and take of a gift isn't a gift unless there's a receiver of the gift. And a Dharma talk isn't a Dharma talk without a listener and a speaker. And a human being may not be a human being without the conversations that completing the conversations that they've started. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. So another one that we have is, how can one work on developing constancy in a world that does not stay the same for an instant?
You do it slowly, without even actually thinking of, I'm working on constancy. You just focus on what you've decided to do, and then you just keep doing it. And your effort is always on the keeping doing it. And you actually don't think about anything else. And so, little by little, whatever it is that you're doing matures, and then it matures more, it grows, and then it grows more, and it grows more, and then it becomes more a part of you until it actually shows. It shows in your skin, even. It shows in your movements, in the quality of your expressions, even I think your eyes. So, and the more you work on it, the easier it is to stay focused on working on it. And that said, the hardest thing is when you stop, even for a day, and then getting back on track. That's when people lose focus. People lose focus when they go on vacation, for example, and then they come back and they've forgotten everything. So the answer, the short answer to your question is little by little, without even, you don't even need to think that I'm working on constancy. You just need to focus on continuing to do whatever you've decided to do with faithfulness and sincerity. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. Another one that we have is, could you say more about what Suzuki Roshi meant by his expression, the dark, empty sky?
He meant this kind of like if you're a writer, the blank piece of paper, or if you're a painter, an unpainted canvas. It's the knowing that emptiness has already. We already know, and we already have the purity that we're seemingly striving for, but we don't know. So we don't know what we know. We have this fundamental ingrained intelligence that's again, it's a soul achievement, and we don't know it, and sometimes it's easier for another person to see your qualities than it is for you to see your qualities. But the dark, empty sky, it's like it's there and it's empty, and you can't make distinguishing. You can't distinguish this from that. It's just present, and it's the air we breathe. It's us really. But it's intangible, and we can't describe it exactly, and we can't know it exactly. And that's, he uses that as a metaphor for Zen Buddhism, which is so difficult to grasp with our minds, so much so that he recommends not even trying. And yet we know what it is. If we're practicing, we know what it is. And there isn't even the question, what is it? We just already know. So to me, that goes back to effort, that everything is in the effort, the purity of your effort in whatever you're doing, literally whatever you're doing. That's the same as the dark, empty sky. It's the knowing that's just there. And then the effort is just there. Thank you. That's all I can think of really to say about it.
Thank you, Gail. Another one that we got is, do you or can we perform some form of meditation that is not Zazen?
Yes, of course. You can do whatever form of meditation you want. Zazen is the Zen Buddhist way of meditating. It's actually, the word meditation isn't used very much in Zen. We just say Zazen because the word meditation doesn't really capture what Zazen is. So the practice of Zen Buddhism is the practice of Zazen. And then to have the Zazen mind in everything else that you do, it carries over. But I'm just wondering if you're asking a slightly different question of can we be a Zen student and, you know, and practice a different form of meditations? I think that you could be a Buddhist and practice a different form of meditation, but a Zen Buddhist, Zazen is pretty essential for a Zen Buddhist because the posture itself, assuming the posture itself, Dogen says is enlightenment. That is enlightenment. And if you recall, Dogen says we should be enlightened before we're enlightened. To take the posture is what our practice is. And then to carry the state of mind that the posture gives us into all of our other activities is the way we live our lives. So I hope that's clear. There's no law that says you have to be a Zen Buddhist, but if you want to practice Zen, Zazen is critical. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. The next one we have is, could you say more about the spirit of repetition? That Roshi says, if we lose, our practice will become quite difficult.
I think that it's almost like it's part of the human configuration, this repetition, this with the repetitive. It's like in our nature, it's in our music, it's in our storytelling. It's a very calming. Children love to hear the same story again and again and again. In music, there's a refrain usually, something repeats back. There's something calming and recognizable, and it's also uplifting to know what you're going to do next. And the repetitiveness, like in a routine, for example, you set up your routine for a day and then you repeat it the next day. You already know what you're going to be doing. And there's something grounding and relieving about it. You don't need to rethink, you know, who you are every day. You've set it up. I also think that it's part of our human nature, and that some people say, well, I just can't do the same thing day after day. But I believe that it's they just haven't accessed that part of themselves that can, and not only can, but loves it. That said, there's different ways of doing the same thing day after day. There's different ways of doing it. And that definitely can be according to our nature. But I think that the spirit of repetition, the important word there is spirit, and that we're born with it. And if we leave it out, there's something missing from our lives. Thank you.
Thank you, Gail. The next one we have is, when Roshi says the quality of your state of mind is the activity itself, I'm thinking of someone I know who says things like, I've done a lot of doing this week, but not enough being, which makes it sound like they're two different things. Roshi is saying they can be the same. Is that right?
Yes. Being and doing are the same. Sometimes when we're doing, we forget being. But if we remember being, then being and doing are the same. There's a teaching in Zen that says, no matter how busy we are, there always should be a part of us that is not busy. So busy, 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 but inside there's a part of you that's not busy. And that's very important to remember and to keep remembering and going back to the part of you that's not busy. There's a koan around that. Two brothers, I think, and one of them is always, you know, sweeping the temple grounds or something. And the other brothers criticizes him and says, you know, brother, you're so, you know, always sweeping. Why don't you relax? And the brother who's always sweeping says, brother, I may always be sweeping, but there's also always a part of me that, he says, it's not busy, that it's not sweeping. It's informative to think about that sometimes, just as you go through your day. Where is the part of me that's not busy now? What is the part of me that's not busy doing? If it's not busy, what is it doing? Questions like that, they're important. Thank you.
Thank you, Gil. The next one we have is, why does Roshi say we should not be interested in gathering knowledge?
Because it's not integral to answering the question, who am I? Roshi feels that our life is short. It's unpredictable. We don't know what's going to happen or when to us. And we should be aware of the importance of every minute of our lives and not waste time. And basically gathering knowledge, which we don't really need for the important questions like, who am I? For who am I, we need Zazen. That's, and really, in a way, that's all. We need to get in touch with our with who we are before all the knowledge. And so that's why Roshi says, instead of acquiring knowledge, we should not be interested. It's extreme. His attitude was extreme. I think I've told you a number of times we had a study period at Tassajara for an hour. And you were supposed to read a Buddhist book of your choice. And Roshi's idea was, well, the mind needs food, so we give it food. That's the importance of that. And he's pretty emphatic about that, actually. Maybe there's time for a short question more.
That was the last one, Gail.
Well, this is the second to last talk of this series, and I hope that you take seriously, you know, these ideas for reflection that we leave posted, so that you really, those are for integration. Those are for you to take what you heard and really make maybe the main idea, take it inside yourself and mix it up with your life so that it will show up in your life as a kind of knowledge, really. Not the kind of knowledge that Roshi says you should not be interested in. This is a different kind of knowledge. It's a self-knowledge, and it's about who am I. Constancy is a quality of who you are. So we should get to know it as best as possible. So I will see you next week. And I thank you so much for being here. And those during the week also who arrived during the week. And my team, Brian and Sahar and Brendan, who do a lot behind the scenes to make these talks possible. Thank you all, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.